again, everybody. It is time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 138. And I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, promising you that this podcast will be free of video review. Joining me up in Tallahassee, David Rowe. How you doing, Dave?
I'm good. Just want to make sure that we don't need to take another look at that on the video review. No. Okay, we're good.
No, we are not doing the video review here. The process is broken. We don't know what a clear and obvious error is anyway. I guess the word clear and the word obvious are just too difficult to decipher.
They're evidently not clear nor obvious.
Yeah, the meanings of those words are clearly not clear and obvious, obviously. So, all right, so we're going to have a fun show for you tonight. this week we've got Orlando Pride to talk about. We've got the Orlando City to talk about. And none of it's good. None of it's good. I think we'll start out with the Lions. That probably will be the longer conversation. Orlando City going up to D.C. First ever trip to Audi Field, David. And, you know, we saw the lineup come out, and I immediately said, 5-0 D.C.
You did indeed say that, which sadly, your actual prediction from the podcast last week was 3-2.
Yeah. DC. Well, you know, that's the one that's official. The one I say in chat is not official.
That's true.
So it's crazy that that actually happened. But it was a bizarre game in all respects. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw the lineup come out, and there are no attacking midfielders in the attacking midfield. 4-2-3-1. Chris Mueller was back in the lineup as he's been an attacking midfielder, but you got Chris Nagita at the center attacking mid and Tony Rocha on the left side. Behind them, Yuri Rosell and Will Johnson as the defensive midfielders. El Munir slotting back into his old left back role and playing it about as he always does. And Dom up top. So it was, and then Joe Bendick also being back in the starting lineup. And he would be a talking point in the game as well. So the game, you know, kind of starts off, and you know, the longer it goes and it's scoreless and you're feeling like, hey, this is maybe working, this strategy that James O'Connor's come up with. It's not very attack minded, but you know, there were some opportunities. I was very surprised at how well Chris Nagita kind of facilitated in the midfield and got the ball forward into the attack, and it was looking pretty good. Yuri Rosell was very involved, and mm-hmm. you know, it just looked like you know, Orlando City might not be able to score, but it looked like they were keeping things pretty locked down on their own end as well. There weren't a lot of great chances for DC, and you know, most of my concern was coming from down the left of Orlando City, the right of DC, as O'Neill Fisher was basically eating El Munir's lunch most of the first half, forcing turnovers, you know, forcing throw-ins and out and dead ball situations when El Munir should have been able to move the ball up the field, and that would actually come back and haunt Orlando City at the death. 3 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the first half, which is a pretty high number for a first half, but in the fourth minute of that 3 minutes of stoppage time, DC United opened the scoring with a late goal. It was just a devastating goal. It was devastating, really, was the word to describe the entire game. But El Munir, again, having trouble with Fisher on the left side, seconds to go in half, just boot the damn ball down the field. No, I'm going to go by Fisher, and I'm going to do like a little fancy footwork on the sideline and lose the ball out of bounds. DC throw in. They get it to Acosta. Acosta gets it to Rooney. Rooney gets it back to Acosta. Still in pretty good shape. Tarek got beat, but at least he forced his man wide. Not much of an angle to shoot at. Acosta scored anyway because Joe Bendick says, you know what? He's not going to beat me in the near post. I have to guard my far post. No, sadly, Joe, no. You got beat at the near post, and it was 1-0, and a completely unnecessary and very aggravating goal after what was otherwise a really great half for Orlando City.
Exactly right. The you're feeling really good, like you said. You know, despite that lineup that comes out when you see it, and you yourself said, "Oh, 5-0." You're looking at that lineup, going, "I'm not so sure about this." But through all the first half, minus a couple seconds, you know, they did pretty well. Like you said, Higuita played very well, I thought. You know, there were times earlier in the season when he would get forward from his defensive midfield position and create some opportunities offensively, and perhaps that's what O'Connor saw and wanted to try and use, and it seemed to be, you know, working a bit. You had to have some way to get the ball into Dwyer, so and with Jotun and Kluschen out, well, somebody had to do it. So it's incredibly disappointing that as you're going towards the death of the first half, you're thinking, great, we're going to go into the locker room with 0-0. That's as good as you could hope for, especially the way that Orlando's given up goals early in games. But alas, 'twas not to be. And El Munir did not have a good night. I don't remember what his score was from our player grades, but I know it wasn't good, nor should it have been. So, and Joey B, one would have hoped he'd know better. Evidently, he won the starting position back during training. He may go the other direction now again, but regardless, honestly, an incredible shot from Costa, because, like you said, it was not a good angle, and it went in near post, and that's a very, very difficult shot to make. So, unfortunately, you know, how it ends up is 1-0, and you're sitting there going, okay, here we go again.
Yeah, it was a tough shot, and credit to Costa for making it, but apparently, I don't know if Joe was thinking that he had got runners coming behind him and he thought he had to cheat a little bit on a cross from that position in the field, but he got completely caught on that, and it was a bad goal to give up, and I will say that he probably got the start because of Earl's bad goal in the previous game. Joe just has shown this year that he's not quite on his game, and that was another instance of it. It was a goal that, you know, you don't see top goalkeepers allow from that position, and he allowed it, so I guess he's not a top goalkeeper. At least he's not playing like one right now.
At least not this year.
So 1-0, the hosts with all the momentum going into the locker room again in the fourth minute of 3 minutes of stoppage time. But who's counting? Certainly not Juan Carlos Rivero.
No, definitely not the refs.
And so they come out in the second half, and you know, Orlando City, boom, 5 minutes in, equalize. A really nice play by Rossell in the attacking third. He heads the ball, you know, into an open area where he can get to it first, and you know, sends across through the six for, you know, intended for Dom Dwyer, and knocked into the net by David Osted, and makes it 1-1, an own goal. And it was I don't know, I heard a lot of people saying this should be Yuri's goal, but it was definitely an own goal. It was probably not as egregious as Amro Tarek's goal, and as far as I know, he's kept his goal from the New England game that Matt Turner knocked in. I'm still trying to puzzle that one out, as the ball came off of the post in front of the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper swung his hand up and knocked it into his own net. And somehow that's not an own goal, but this one was an own goal, and I would give it as an own goal, you know, every day of the week. And I think it was, that's not to take anything away from the play that Rossell made, which prompted the own goal. It was a very difficult ball to handle, and, you know, getting into those positions, that's how you create own goals.
Right, and if you thought that the angle that Acosta took his shot from was severe, well, there's a reason why it was an own goal, because Rossell was practically at the touchline, so it's nearly impossible if you don't put a little English on a ball to get it to go in from there, unless you get a little help.
Yeah, so it was game on, and or so we thought, because a few minutes later, Orlando City gets a nice little counterattack going, but Higuita overhits the cross, and then all of a sudden we're running down the other field to see, is Yamil Assad okay? Is he dead? I'm not sure. Is he in a coma? I'm not really sure what's going on with him. We get to see the replay, and it looked like Higuita, you know, kind of reached out to grab him and kind of pull himself by the it was definitely a foul, at least on the tug. and they went to the review to see, you know, if something worse happened, and they red card Igita and ruined the game. And I can tell you this, that the, you know, there's been a lot made of Assad making a meal of this, and about how his head didn't seem to even move as Igita's arm came by. That doesn't matter for the purposes of a foul or even for the purposes of a red card. An attempt being made is enough to get someone a red card. But you can't tell me, with Igita looking the other direction and pulling himself kind of around the guy, for certain. You can surmise all you want, but you cannot say for certain that was an attempted throwing of an elbow at the head intentionally. And what Rivero did when he went to look at the replay was he had to make sure that he didn't make a clear and obvious error. Now, I don't know how you assume intent there and call that a clear and obvious error. But he somehow did, and Higuita's out, and he will miss the Atlanta game.
Yeah, even Lexi Lawless had to, as they hashed it out over a three-minute period, had to say, okay, you want me to make an argument for this being a red card? I'll make an argument. There was that much conversation at that level from the commentators.
Right,
so,
JP asked him, he's like, is that a red card for you? And he says, you can make a case for it. And as I
right,
said
which
on
is
Twitter,
not clear and obvious.
Yeah, if you can make a case for it, is not a clear and obvious error. It was the first misuse of video review that Rivero had on the night, and it wouldn't be the last. So
no.
So it's 1-1, but Orlando City down a man, and now is going to have to defend basically the rest of the game and try to somehow get a result and just dig in. And that's kind of what we felt like the rest of the game was going to be. That was, we're in the 55th minute, I believe, and mm-hmm. So you've got you know, a good 35-40 minutes to go, and it just didn't look good. And then it really didn't look good when DC put the ball in the net. Now, they did score earlier, and Rooney put a header in, and it was ruled offside by Assad, and Assad on the replay showed he was very clearly offside, and that one didn't.
Yes.
I'm not sure that actually went to review. I can't remember, because, you know, the game is just a blur of reviews and strange calls. But I
can't
do
remember
know
if it did either, but it was Assad was absolutely offside.
Yeah, he was a good couple yards offside and ahead of Rooney. So it wasn't Rooney that was offside. He was fine, but Assad on the previous touch, header across, was definitely offside. So no goal there. But DC did make it 2-1 on the second Acosta goal, a ball to the back pass. Flag comes up. It's offside. It's not going to count. Oh, we're going to go review it.
because of course we are.
Yes, we are, because we have to find a way to make this life miserable for every Orlando City fan. And Rivero goes and takes a look. They showed the replay several times on television. That was a bang-bang play, very, very close, not clear, not obvious. Stick with the call on the field, right? No, we don't stick with the call on the field. Obviously a clear error on my part, Rivero says. I mean, he overruled himself on a bang-bang play. If I am, you know, gun to my head, he's probably onside, so it's probably the right call. But under the rules of the game, that's a second misuse of video review. You are supposed to check for clear and obvious errors. That was not a clear and obvious error. So if you want to say justice was served with the you know, incorrect ruling, go ahead, because we're going to talk about that later.
Oh yeah, and I kind of feel that video review in MLS is, and obviously it's hit us hard, but overall it has not been done well, not like we saw in the World Cup. And I don't know, you know, if listeners, if it your job, if something's not working well, they bring in a trainer or they do additional training, maybe that needs to happen. There's also not as many cameras showing the angles, so I don't think MLS is that hard up that they can't, you know, get some more cameras in there. Maybe they can't. I don't know, but I haven't looked at their books, but I would certainly hope that they can afford some more cameras.
Well, it's not MLS. It's FS1. FS1's putting on the event. They're the ones that should be having the equipment. Now, I want you to keep in mind, I want you to keep in mind the camera angle that was shown on that second goal, because that's going to be important later. That's going to be very, very important later.
Yeah.
So it's 2-1 Washington and or DC, and of course Orlando City's fans are feeling, quite poorly treated at this point, as two major calls that weren't clear and obvious go against them. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where, like, what are you going to do? It's 2-1. You know, the floodgates are probably going to open, you're thinking, at this point, right? You're thinking,
yep,
they've already got their second. They're a man up. Still a lot of time to go. No, as luck would have it, Yuri Rosell, having a great night, just unleashes a great pass for Dom Dwyer, unlocks the defense. Dwyer with a fantastic run, gets in almost too close to the goalkeeper, but he manages a scoop shot and to get it over Ostead and to get just enough on it to put it in the net before the defense can arrive and clear it off the line. And it's 2-2 out of nowhere.
Yeah, like you said, Yuri having a fantastic game, and then Dom's shot up for goal of the week, by the way, so get out there and vote. A brilliant strike, and it's not even a strike, like you said, it was a scoop from the striker. It was a veteran scoop.
Yeah,
there's no other word for it. I mean, but it was a really good shot, and I don't even want to use shot because that would indicate some power. But it was the finesse behind it and the awareness behind it was absolutely incredible. To put it right over the keeper where he can't get it, and just hard enough that it goes in and no other defender can get it back there and stop it. And you're blown away if you're watching this game. I know I was, because here you are, a man down, thinking you're going to have to defend. You go a goal down at that point, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden you're even again. And what minute was that goal in?
They believe it was the 71st
70,
minute.
Yeah, 72nd, somewhere around there. So suddenly, you know, not quite half the time that you figured you have to defend has gone by, and now you're back in it.
Absolutely, and you think, great, okay, cool, let's get out of here with a point. Because at that point it felt like, it really felt like, and I said this at the time, DC was going to end up with 80% possession. They were just constantly, they weren't getting a lot of great chances, but they were prowling around the outside of the area, like left to right, right to left, moving it around, looking for an opening, probing, and then trying to find a way to slip Rooney in, to slip Acosta in, or slip in Assad, one of those guys. Areola would take a shot from distance every now and then, but it really looked like Orlando was being pretty well organized and making DC work for it. You just had to worry about, would they find that one crack they needed? And then Orlando hits back and makes it 2-2. And it really kind of took them aback. I think Orlando had the better of the play for the next little bit after that goal. Despite being a man down, they were able to have some control of the game, of the ball possession in the midfield and that kind of thing, and kind of take the pressure off. And, you know, as the game wore down, then DC brought in some offensive substitutions, took their left back completely off the field and put another attacker out there, and just went for it. And you know, credit to Ben Olsen. That's what you should do in that situation at home against a 10-man team, trying anything you can to get back into playoff contention. And that's when they brought on Darren Maddox and they had a little bit extra spark, it looked like DC looked really dangerous. But, you know, time was going by and time was going by, and you get to the end of the game and there's 6-7 minutes of stoppage time.
Well, between the on-field incursion by a young man and some others, and then the other stoppage, I want to say I was surprised, but I was expecting the long you know, stoppage time afterwards. I wasn't hoping for that long. Obviously.
Yeah, I was thinking it would be 5 and maybe 5 or 6, so, yeah. And it ended up being 7. But whatever, it was, you know, and it was, you know, part of that was video reviews. They video reviewed Dom's to make sure he was onside, because yep. They had to see, is there a way we can take this goal away? How can we take it away? Let's see. Let's go to the video. But nope, it was so onside they couldn't even overturn that. So So
give them credit for trying, though.
So it comes to the last minute, and there's a good full minute to go. DC earns a corner, and this is where the game got really weird. So they take the corner kick, and they bring Ostead up into the penalty area to give them a two-man advantage. And I went, There's like a full minute left. What are they doing here? This is a thing that usually teams do when they have like, this is going to be the last kick of the game, right?
Right.
Bring in the goalkeeper, because it doesn't matter if they clear it, the whistle's blowing and the game's over. And there's a good full minute to go, and Ostead comes up and like, okay, well, this is weird. Maybe if we can get lucky, get this thing out of here, maybe score an empty net goal or something. And damn if that didn't almost happen, Dave.
Yeah.
Clearance came from, I'm not sure who it was. It might have been O'Neill, might have been Rossell, but it got knocked way out of the box, way off to the left side of the field. As luck would have it, one of Orlando's slower and more exhausted players on the night, Will Johnson, was out there, and he did win the race to the ball. Now, this is going to be...
He was racing Wayne Rooney, who is also old and slow.
Yeah, Rooney's old and slow. Maybe he hasn't quite lost... I mean, he's lost a step, but he had decent speed to begin with, so maybe he was always faster than Will Johnson. But, you know, he was out there doing a lot of standing with his back to goal, sliding left, sliding right, while Johnson was busting his tail to defend for the whole second half and cover extra space because there's no Christian Aguita in the game.
Very true.
He had a lot more running and a lot more energy to expend. Rooney also slept in his own bed the night before. Will was traveling. I'm not trying to make up excuses. I'm just setting the stage here. Johnson gets to the ball first. You could see that he looked over to his right. He had two guys coming, but they were well behind him. So he takes a step into the – he takes a touch to take it into the attacking half of the field just across midfield. Now – Rooney is almost upon him, and now he's figuring, I don't think I can make this shot right now. But he's trying to win the game. A lot of people have said, well, he should have just kicked it down the field and the game's over. That's a good way to get a draw, and that would have been fine. Everybody would have been okay with it, except that everybody would have lost their mind that he didn't try to score, if you really want the truth.
Yeah, there would have been the pitchforks and torches on why he didn't try to do something more. Right.
So... instead, he knows he's got two guys coming. They're not there yet. He tries to inside out the ball with his right foot across the field to his oncoming attacking partners. Rooney makes a great play, slides, and blocks the thing. The reason why his guys were so far behind him is that behind the play, Luciano Costa saw that Stefano Pino, the second-half sub with fresh legs, was starting to sprint down the field to get involved. And he just casually stuck his leg out, tripped him. That probably cost a good 5 to 10 yards of space on the field for Pino. Mm-hmm. Keep that in mind, because if Johnson had seen him further up the field, he maybe doesn't even take a touch. He maybe just first times it across the field, because at that point, Pino's walking it down to the other end and putting it in the empty net.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying probably, because I'm not in Will Johnson's head. I don't know what he would have actually done. I'm just saying that he knew what he had, and if he had a guy closer, that's probably the likeliest and best outcome. And he's probably doing that. I mean, he's gassed. He knows what he's got in the tank. But he tries to beat Rooney. Didn't beat him. Rooney gets up, takes the ball back into the the attacking half for DC, sends a ball to the back post. Acosta's on it. For some reason, the ball's in the air a half an hour, and Bendick doesn't think to just, maybe I'll just run over and punch that out. Doesn't do anything, kind of then comes halfway off his line and gets beat to the back post, 3-2 at the death.
Which, I'm no keeper, but that's pretty much the worst position a keeper can be in on a play like that.
Pandemonium, shirts off, guys going in the crowd, not getting yellow carded for it. They go and take a look. Guy comes back, makes the video review symbol, which you're only supposed to do, is my understanding, if you're changing the call.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't change the call. This is where I was talking about that earlier angle. We don't get the earlier angle on the television for the last goal. It did look like Acosta was offside. If you are on Twitter and you don't follow the soccer photogrammetry account, basically what they do is they take markers on the field and they do some kind of math that I'm not really smart enough to understand, and they project, offside calls. They projected a 1.5 foot offside for Acosta, and even allowing for some distortion of the lens and angle, they estimate that he was still offside. So, of course, that's not allowable. And the review
No.
didn't turn up anything definitive, but we didn't get to see that same angle we got to see on the second goal, which would have clearly shown whether or not he was offside. It would have been very obvious from that side angle in the attacking third, and we know FS1 had a camera there.
So that brings up the question, why didn't we see that angle?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna not chalk this one up to a conspiracy. I'm gonna chalk it up to either a bad director or
Or bad cameraman.
potentially they moved the camera for what reason. I would have no idea if you know the team with 11 men is attacking that goal. I don't know why you would move that camera to another location. So I'm not really sure why we didn't see that angle, but the angle exists and we never got to see it, so we never got a clear picture of whether or not Acosta was offside. The goal stood after review, and for some reason, a lot of people on Twitter don't seem to think that that goal was reviewed, but it was. It was reviewed, and it was found to be fine. And so I think every review except the Rooney goal that was disallowed because it was obviously offside on Assad went against Orlando on the night. Every single one.
And there was nothing that they could hem and haw about on the Assad one because it was he was 6 feet
Right.
offside.
Now, keep in mind this offside thing. The second goal really torqued me because that was the exact play that allowed Orlando City to pull even 2-2 with LAFC, and that was overturned, and it was also not clear and obvious.
Yep, I do remember that.
So,
There
I'm
seems to
not.
be a lack of consistency.
No, it's consistently against Orlando.
Oh,
It's
that's a
very
good point.
consistent, very, very consistent. Opportunity to keep Aguita out of the Atlanta game? Check. opportunity to give DC a couple of goals? Check. Yeah, it was. And my hat's off to Wayne Rooney. He played a hell of a game, and he really made some great plays down the stretch. And I really hated it because it was. That performance was deserving of at least a point, Dave. It was just such an. I mean, we would be sitting here if that, even without the late goal. If let's say, let's
Johnson
say,
makes that
yeah,
pass and
let's
gets it to
say,
Pino,
yeah,
yeah.
and let's say Pino does something ridiculous and like falls down and doesn't get the goal. We're all lamenting the fact that it wasn't a win, but at least at that point, we're saying, what a heroic game to go on the road with that lineup, without Yotun, without Kleshchen, and to get a result.
After going down a man.
Yeah, I mean that would have been a tremendous
Tremendous
accomplishment.
point. Yeah, it would have been a tremendous point. It's one of those that you would have looked at, not point wise, but emotionally as a win, and to have it stolen away at the death of the match on such a weird, weird play with also, like you said, an offside that was not reviewed or not properly reviewed. It's heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, whatever bad heart things you want to ascribe, that's what it was.
Exactly, and it was too bad. I felt so bad for James O'Connor, and he's got the team playing better. They're not where they need to be yet, but you could tell the tactics and the intent that he put in. His team believed in it. They went out and they executed it, and without question, and without Yotun, they put defensive midfielders in the attacking midfield, and really, it was a good strategy. It was working. It was really, they were really doing well. In fact, one would even say that if this team didn't have a left back who can't defend, they might have had a better fate. I mean, again, El Munir, for all that he brings the team in the attacking half, he just has moments in the defensive half that you go, who put him at left back and why? How did we go find this fullback? Why was he a fullback? It's maddening because O'Neill Fisher is a decent player, but he's not even the guy that, I mean, DC's been looking for a replacement for him. He shouldn't be getting absolutely owned by that guy out there on the right. He just shouldn't. And he did, and again, all he has to do is lump the ball down the field. Maybe don't try to be fancy. Kick the ball off the guy and out of bounds. Get your own throw in. I mean, the half is almost over. And
It
it could have changed the outcome of the game.
and it makes you wonder what would, and I've never said this before, what would Donny Toya have done?
Yeah, I mean that's a good question. I mean he certainly doesn't get forward in the attack, but he doesn't have the pace, but he's certainly a stay-at-home defender who's competent, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say, but it was certainly just again what I said earlier, a devastating result because that was not a performance that should have gotten 0 points on the road.
No, and it takes the wind out of the sails of the supporters of, I'm assuming, the team. O'Connor might be the only stubborn bastard left that's gonna, take it and let it burn deep in his heart into a angry ball and use it. But yeah, it's you hate to say the word unfair when it comes to sports because things happen. It was, like you said, a good play from Rooney, but it honestly felt unfair that it should end like that. And I know sports aren't fair and life's not fair and there's nothing to be done about it, but dang it, it hurts.
Yeah, and if you're, I felt bad for Johnson too because Johnson doesn't deserve the grief that he's taken about the play.
No.
He's trying to make a play to win the game. He didn't make the play because another guy made a better play, and because another guy tripped his teammate. Those are the two huge factors in that thing. Maybe he could have taken it first time and just smashed it down the field and hoped it went in, but obviously the guy's not feeling confident. He knows the net's empty. He knows what he's got. He's trying to make that play. It's like, if I could just do this, it's an easy goal.
Right, versus
Why,
a not easy goal from me. Yeah.
right? Why take the chance if he figured he could do it, and Rooney surprised him. I think Rooney was probably a little quicker than he thought, and that ball nearly got out of there. It nearly squirted right under his leg, and it didn't get there. But again, he doesn't maybe take that touch if he's got Pino earlier.
Well, that and
Pino's got the fresh legs. Pino's running full tilt. There's no one on him. There's no way they're catching him. He might have been able to just lump that across the field first time with his first touch before Rooney got anywhere near him, and set up an easy goal. And unfortunately, that didn't happen because Assad, or I mean Acosta, the goal
the
scorer,
eventual
got
goal
away with a
scorer,
trick.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean he benefited from being a
It's,
jerk.
yeah, so, and I will be 100% shocked if we hear anything about that trip, even though it's been making the rounds. There will be no repercussions for that at all.
No, there
And
won't. And there really shouldn't be because really at any other point what you're doing there is you're saying, okay, that's a trip, it's a foul. It's a yellow card. It's not a red card. It wasn't a red card offense. He just stuck his leg out and tripped him. That was a professional foul. It's a yellow card, but he played advantage. And at that point, Will was the first one to the ball. So he played advantage. He did what he needed to do. Now, could he have said, this is all a continuation of the same play? Now I'm blowing the whistle and bringing it back here. Sure, but I don't even think the ref saw that or knew what happened.
No.
So, I mean, it would have been possible for him to review the play and say, this whole entire thing started with a foul right here, free kick Orlando City. He could have done that. That's a possibility, but I mean, come on. The guy gave a goal when it was off, when it was initially called on the field offside and wasn't clear and obvious. So you'd think really think he's going to make that call. I mean, at that point, I said there's no, even if it's an obvious offside, they're not overturning it because this crowd would all spill on the field and rip him to shreds.
Yeah, it the here's the only thing though is I don't think that any of that changes is if it's in Orlando City Stadium.
Well, you're
I
probably
think all the,
right.
I think all the call I think all the calls go exactly the same way, and that's infuriating.
It is. And you know what? To anybody that's not an Orlando City fan that's listening to this podcast, first of all, hey, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Second of all, if you think that Orlando City fans cry about the officiating too much, I'm not asking you to say, that your team has never had a bad call against you, that it hasn't cost you a game here or there. I'm just saying this has been 4 years of it, and I can't think back over 4 years and went, holy cow, what a bad call that got us a win. I can't think of one time that that's happened, not one single time.
Yeah, I've
And
had I was talking with somebody on Twitter, which is always a bad idea, but they said, hey, calls have gone Orlando City's way, and I said, yeah. But and the person named one or two, one of them had something to do with Dwyer. I don't remember what it was. I said, okay, fine. Yeah, you can find examples, but go back and count. Like, if somebody could go back and count all of them and tell me that it's not lopsided against, if somebody wants to go find that and prove to me that it's not lopsided against, I will change my tune completely. But I don't believe that that's the case. I believe that if somebody actually went back and found all of the those situations, it would be lopsided against Orlando City. And you and I, for years now on this podcast, have said no conspiracy, no conspiracy, no conspiracy. And at my heart, I still don't believe there is. But at some point, they keep piling on, and it makes it harder for us to defend. Well, not that I want to defend pro at
It's
any
just
level,
harder
but
to
it's,
argue. It's harder to argue
yeah.
against a conspiracy. Yeah, you're right. Because, again, it's not that Orlando City hasn't won a free kick that wasn't really a foul, or that they haven't gotten a corner that should have been a goal kick, or whatever. Those calls, yes, they happen to everybody. We're talking about game-changing and game-costing goals, or and decisions, not just goals. I'm talking about red cards, penalties, all of these things. I can't think of one that's gone Orlando's way where I've thought after the game, hey, Orlando lucky to win. They didn't deserve that goal, or they didn't deserve that guy getting a penalty or whatever.
But
You
it's
just
not hard
can't.
to think of five off the top of your head. I mean, two in this game alone,
We've
so.
had probably five since James O'Connor became coach 6 games
Right.
ago. I mean, if you look at Columbus, where Pro comes out and says, well, yeah, we shouldn't have done that. We shouldn't have given him a penalty. You think of the LAFC game that was tied with 20 minutes to go, and then it wasn't tied anymore because reasons. They pile up. And when we've been talking about this game for 36 minutes, and most of that's been about officiating decisions, so that tells you something about the game. There certainly were the biggest talking points, and it spoiled what was really a compelling game.
It really was. I mean, DC was not is not a top of the table team. Yeah, the addition of Wayne Rooney, and they've started playing better now, but it was two not great teams going at it. But it was really entertaining for a while, especially with the comebacks and then going down a man and defending. You're right. It was an incredibly compelling and exciting game to watch. And I feel that everybody could have probably felt good if it had ended in a draw, but it was not to be.
Right. And it really, if there was any justice on the planet, Will gets that ball across the field to Pino, and Pino scores a goal, and we win 3-2. But that didn't happen. There is no justice
There is
because
definitely no justice.
we're going to have a season of, where you get
Every single
12
call.
to 15 games of oh my God, we got another baloney call and won the game before this thing evens out. That's all I'm saying. After 4 years of this, it's going to take quite a bit for this to even out. It might even out when I'm 100 years old. I don't know, maybe. But anyway, enough about the game. Another loss, ninth straight loss for Orlando City on the road. Winless in five, or yeah, five, three, four losses and a draw. And but goal number 11 for Dom, so that's a positive. He scored in a couple games here in a row, and it's good to see him get his scoring boots back on. Because really, would like to see him break the club MLS record for goals in a season. He would need to get 18. He's up to 11. It's going to be probably a tall task to get to 18. But if he could erase Kyle Larin's name at the top of that list, that'd probably make a lot of people happy.
It would certainly it would make my day brighter.
Anyway, and so my man of the match, pretty obviously, Yuri Rossell, a goal and an assist, or at least he forced a goal, and the great assist on Dom's goal. A fantastic defensive effort. He was all over the field. His best game as a Lion, in my opinion. And this is the Yuri Rossell we thought we were getting at the beginning of the season.
Absolutely right. I completely agree. I mean, we spoke about it in the internal chat, and when we were asking, you and I were the first people in answer, and Yuri was that answer. He was all over the place. He had an exceptional game. And yeah, you're right. This is the Yuri we were hoping to get. This is one that when he brought in, I was very excited about. And hopefully, this will prompt better performances from him going forward, whether it's back with Higita, or if he's with Johnson again, or it doesn't matter. But that assist was a thing of beauty to allow Dom to get that goal. I mean, it's if I know everybody's going to get to watch the Dom goal, but back the tape up just a bit and watch the assist because it is perfectly weighted.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's turn our attention to what normally makes us happier, the Orlando Pride. Didn't make us very happy this weekend. I actually covered this game for the site, did the recap, and went to the stadium and had to watch it. I mean, it was a game where, oh my God, the Portland Thorns are a team that Orlando has struggled against, and most teams in the league have struggled against the Portland Thorns. We think, okay, home game, they're coming off a 2-2 draw, an embarrassing draw against Sky Blue. Maybe they're going to come out with some fire and brimstone and take it to Portland. And, you know, Orlando started very brightly in this game. The first 20 to 30 minutes just owned the game. They spent most of that time in the Portland half, in the Portland third even. Won a string of corners early, got some shots. They were hitting French basically dead on center, though, and not – or not getting balls on target or getting them blocked, but they were getting chances and it looked like it was just a matter of time before they knocked the door down. And then they didn't, they just kept not doing it.
Yep.
And Portland kind of got a little bit on the front foot toward the end of the half. And it was, I thought still an overall, good first half for the Pride. They ended up not being able to score, but they kind of controlled most of the half, and you thought, hey, this is pretty good to get their juice back at halftime, maybe get a little bit of that flow going from the first half, and maybe they can make something of this. You definitely wanted them to at least get a draw, keep Portland where they were, kind of hold everybody at bay and try to at least advance at least a point in the playoff race. But in the second half came, and just I don't even know how to describe this team in the second half. It was just lethargic and had no passion, no energy, did not come out with the same fight and the same intensity. And Portland came out revved up and ready to go, and they got a couple of quick goals and made it 2-0. And at that point, you figured there just didn't look like there was going to be any way back in the game. Once it got to 2, when Rosso scored, it was an even more beaten and defeated looking team out there. No Sidney LaRue, she missed with an illness, but everybody else was there. And I thought that overall, a lot of good play, especially in the first half. Not many chances in the second half. Portland just locked them down, and Orlando didn't seem to have any fight. They brought out some players to try to, make a game of it. Rachel Hill, I think she got like 3 touches the entire rest of the game when she came in, and she's the spark plug. She's the fire off the bench, and she wasn't able to provide any of that. And really, Orlando couldn't control the ball. They couldn't possess it. They'd lump it up the field, and Portland would just win it in the air and come back the other way, or they would try to pick somebody out and pass it directly to Portland. It was just the passing was terrible. One of the worst passing halves I've ever seen from the Pride in that second half. And Portland gets the win, and now the Pride are in a little bit of trouble. They're just they come into this week with just a point on Chicago for that fourth spot. Chicago has 2 games in hand. Chicago plays in the midweek against the Seattle Reign, who are going to have a bunch of key players missing. So
gets better. Who do we play?
Things are not looking good there for the Reign to keep Chicago at bay in one of their games in hand. But yeah, then the Pride have to go to North Carolina to play the best team in the league that's already clinched the Shield a couple weeks ago, and they have not fared well against North Carolina this year. So it's can this team make the playoffs? They can, yeah. But things are really looking bad, and they're going to need to go to North Carolina and get a result. They're going to need to beat Chicago at home, and they're going to need to go to Sky Blue and get another win, and they're going to need to get a little bit of help besides that probably to be able to clinch. I think if they win all 3 games, they're probably fine. But
that's a tall order.
Yeah, I mean, even the way Chicago's playing, that's not a guaranteed even a point in that game. And, we saw what they did in 2 games against Sky Blue. A 1-goal game and a tie. So the Pride have it all to do now. There's been a lot of heat on Tom Sermonti. I know he feels it. He definitely spoke after the match like a man who did not know why his team didn't come out all fired up in the second half the way they did in the first half. He didn't have an answer. He didn't have an explanation. We got the same thing from Ashlyn Harris. We got the same thing from Emily Van Egmond. You know, why wasn't the energy the same in the second half? Not sure. Don't know. Nobody seemed to have an answer. Ashlyn said, this is the, it's going to be difficult now. This is the path we chose, and now we have to come up big. And she's right. And I think it was good of her to own it. And I think it was, Tom was asked in a number of different ways, what happened? What was the difference? Was it anything in training? He's like, we had a good week of practice. We had a good week. We didn't do anything different. We did everything right. We did the same nutrition, the same recovery.
They ate their meals at the same time they do. There was nothing different.
Yeah, they didn't change anything up because I don't understand it. And, the suggestion there was, somebody asked him if, who needs to step up and fix this. And, he said, well, we got all these international players and they got to step up and change this. Not one person, but like five or six. He says, look at Portland. They have, they have Sinclair, they have Iran, they have all of these players doing it. Sonnet, they have many players that are stepping up and leading. And that he said, that's what Orlando Pride need. And I think he's right. And I also think that the Pride have just, it's been a season long slog for them where they never have seemed to find an identity. And I don't know if it's because of injuries and international absences early. I don't know if it's because once everybody got here, Tom, had all these players suddenly that all could play and tried to change up the lineup from week to week and not come up with a consistent look, whether it's, a chemistry issue with Catley leaving and Bledsoe leaving and other players coming in. Maybe the chemistry is not as good on the team this year. I couldn't tell you what it is any more than anybody on that team could tell you what it is. But I do know this. A lot of people are giving Tom a hard time, and Tom may lose his job if the team doesn't make the playoffs, because of the big names on the team. It's a cap league, so everybody's basically spending the same amount. But he's got the names, but the thing is, if he leaves, some of the names are leaving too, and some new names might not be coming in because a lot of these players are here because of Tom Sormani.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is incredibly well respected. Obviously, former national team coach, and I feel bad for Tom because he genuinely had no idea what the heck happened any more than the rest of us did. And I don't know if the players have any idea. I don't know if somebody kidnapped their puppies during the halftime and threatened them that they better go out and play bad. Who knows? There was no explanation for it. They're not out of it. Like I said, we're probably going to need some help. Maybe we luck out and Carolina decides to rest some players. I don't see it happening, but weirder things have definitely happened this season for both City and Pride. So, I think it's just going to take, it's just going to take them stepping up. It's, like you said, those internationals, or even the ones that aren't international, the ones who have been there every day, your Pickett's and Presley's and whoever else that just need to up their game and be the person that is the one that says, yes, I'm going to take it on myself. Obviously, your Morgans and your Martas and Kennedys have to do that as well. But I don't know if you had told me that this is where we would be at this point in the season, a couple months ago, I'd have been shocked. I mean,
especially with the home results this year. The home results this year have not been good, and the team's been good on the road. So
yeah,
it's been kind of a weird season for the Pride. Lest anyone think that I'm a Tom Sormani apologist, I do think he's a good coach. I do think he's done a good job overall, but I do have my issues. I mean, I don't think Marta should be playing striker. I think Marta's too good of an attacking midfielder and facilitator to be playing striker. Obviously, with Sidney LaRue out, you'd have to do something else up top to go along with Morgan, but you got Rachel Hill on the team. Chia Bogugu could play in that spot if she needed to. And then you could move, put in Pickett since it was a three-person back line. Essentially, it was a five-back line on defense and a three-back line in attack, and Carson Pickett can handle that. You can move, so it would allow you to move Chi up to the top next to Morgan, whatever. So I don't like Marta playing striker. I mean, she's capable of doing it for sure, but I think she's much better served in the attacking midfield role. I also wouldn't put Shalina Zdorsky in as a defensive midfielder. I don't think that was the right move, and she kind of was invisible in the game. And you know, a lot of times that's good for a defensive midfielder, but in this case, not quite as good. In this case, I didn't think
Right.
that she. I don't know if it's not being used to that situation. I mean, I would almost rather have seen Kennedy return to the defensive midfield than that. But again, there were a lot of things. I would give Camilla more time on the field because she's starting to show glimpses of what she had last year, specifically the tying goal against Sky Blue. She made a great move, and that freed up Danny Weatherholt for the tying goal. So I would play more Camilla, but you know, so I do have issues with some of what Tom's done in team selection, but I don't think that the overall attitude of the team is right. I don't think that they have an identity. I don't know that they've got the chemistry that the team had last year, and that sometimes can happen, and especially on a team that's full of star players like this, that you can have, you know, everybody wants to do their thing, but nobody, you know, the collective is really what's important, and I think the team, it will be interesting to see how they respond to this in North Carolina this weekend.
If they don't respond like John Wick after they stole his car and killed his dog, then I'm going to be highly upset.
Spoilers, I haven't seen John Wick.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, John Wick 2 is out. If you haven't seen John Wick, then no, you don't get to say spoilers.
I do get to say it because I
Can
haven't seen
say
it.
it, but come on. I mean, that's like, okay, do you want me to tell you what happened at the
It's
end of
not like
Titanic?
it's not like a Star Wars movie. Come on, it was John Wick was no Titanic. Come on, how much did it cost to make John Wick versus how much it cost to make Titanic? One was a blockbuster and one was you know, a movie that did okay.
I'm sorry, John Wick is on my brain. For listeners, I got to go to the Tampa Bay Comic Con and I met a cosplayer who was John Wick and he was absolutely incredible. So I kind of got to have a drink with John Wick, which was really cool.
I met a cosplayer is not something I ever thought would be on this podcast. Not something I ever thought would be mentioned here, but
I will send you the
there you
picture of
have
him
it.
and you will see
No, it's okay.
how cool it was.
My player of the game for the Pride was Marta. I mean, she seemed to be, you know, hustling, trying to do something, trying to make things happen. I don't think a lot of players made a lot happen in that game,
Yeah,
but
no.
especially in the first half when Orlando was all over Portland, Marta was a very dangerous player, and I really thought that, you know, probably she stood out for me a little bit against you know, the rest of them, and probably made fewer mistakes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's one of the great things about Marta is it's rare that she has a bad game, and in a game where everybody else is having a not great game, if she is just normal, she's going to stand out. So yeah, same here.
All right. So 0 for 2, no half price pizza here in Orlando.
I never get the half price pizza. I never get it. They don't. I go into the pizza place here, and they go, "No, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking
I don't
about."
even know if they're doing that ever since the Papa John's thing, which you know, I don't even want to get into it. I just want to
Yeah,
say
let's not do
I'll just say that
that.
if the guy who's responsible for being an idiot left the company, you know, maybe don't hold it against the rest of the company. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. But anyway, so transfer window news. The transfer window closed and nothing happened. But there's some ongoing rumors that Peruvian international center back slash defensive midfielder Carlos Asquez is trying to be signed by the club. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think the deadline is long gone for even a free transfer at this point, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if they do it. It's not an area of need that I had identified as one of the three primary areas of need,
Nope.
but I guess it couldn't hurt to have another defender based on all the ones that are injured. He's an international. We don't have any international slots left. I'm not sure that you can put somebody on season-ending IR to get their slot back after the trade deadline. That's what I've been told. I have not confirmed that with the league, but so it's iffy.
I guess he really, really wants to play with Yoshi and not just on national team, but that he wants to do it like all the time.
Well, who wouldn't? I mean, come on.
That's a fair point. I mean, I'm always happier when Yoshi's on the field, so you know, no argument for me.
Me too. But he's not going to be on the field against
Atlanta. No, he's not.
Because the disciplinary committee. Well, I mean, you've heard the saying disco sucks. They're not talking about the music, folks.
Nope.
They're talking about the MLS disciplinary committee, which added a game to Yoshi Otune for I guess they're going to call it a punch. But I mean, here's what essentially happened in the New England game. Dust up after the game time goal, Dom committed a foul right on the restart, which kind of ticked off all of New England's team. They surrounded Dom. What do you do in that case? Well, you can't let your star player get surrounded and hassled by the other team, so you step in. And now you got a mass confrontation, Dave, and that's another fine for Orlando. And the other thing you get is you get a fine for James O'Connor, because now that's two mass confrontations under him. So, of course, he can control that from the sideline. And
obviously.
So he's getting fined. The team's getting fined. Yoshi gets a second game, because here's what he did. Jahlil Anibaba, much taller player than Yoshi, because Yoshi's not a tall player, is coming at him. He sees him coming at him. He puts his arm out, extends it. His hand is closed. You could say it's a fist. He's got a closed hand. So I guess by definition, that's a fist. Anibaba walks right into that fist, just walks right up to him, gets in his face. And the fist, you know, as Yoshi's holding it out, is hitting the base of Anibaba's neck. Now, again, it's kind of gentle contact. Anibaba walks up into him, walks into him, not runs. There's no strike. There's no pulling the fist back and throwing it forward. There's just an extended arm that he walks into. Then, as he leans forward and kind of moves Yoshi leans back and kind of pushes him. Again, does not bend the elbow at all. Just keeps the arm extended, gives a little push back. Anibaba kind of steps back, sees the ref over his shoulder, and then all of a sudden he's in pain.
Oh, yes.
That, now he's hurt. Now he's like, oh, did you see that? Did you see what he did? Anyway, that was worth a second game suspension. Keep in mind, he's now going to miss a game against Atlanta United. Atlanta United has a very good striker named Joseph Martinez that 3 weeks ago slammed his face into Chad Marshall's on a full-on headbutt. I'd say that's a dangerous play. Most people would say that's a dangerous play. It's certainly against the rules, and it's usually a red card. For Joseph Martinez, it's not a red card, and it's not a suspension from Disco. So I think when you say, well, Orlando City fans, just all they do is whine about the refs and whine about officiating and whine about this and whine about that, do you maybe not think that there's a reason? Do you maybe not see the disparity that we're seeing? Because I'm seeing a disparity here. I'm seeing, you know, the league's chosen child, the Golden Boot leader. Don't want him out. That's going to cost you some eyeballs, maybe cost you some butts in the seats. Because, you know, the three games since then, all he's done is scored 7 goals.
Well, so what makes it confusing, though, is that Yoshi was a MLS All-Star, so wouldn't you want him in the game?
Oh, if Yoshi was the Golden Boot winner, maybe.
Oh, but just being an All-Star, not good enough.
If he played for Arthur Blank, who is obviously Don Garber's daddy, maybe he would get that benefit too.
See, there was my mix-up.
So, have you seen the cover of Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast album?
Of course.
So, in this case, the devil holding the marionette. Okay, the marionette is Orlando City. The devil is Don Garber, and then the, you know, Eddie, the Iron Maiden mascot, who is pulling the strings of the devil, in this case Don Garber, that's Arthur Blank.
I love it. Oh my god, that's so perfect.
that's the way that is MLS 3.0, ladies and gentlemen. When you hear that term, MLS 3.0, that's what it is. It's Arthur Blank and City Football Group that owns New York City FC pulling the strings of Don Garber, and then Don Garber pulling the strings on the rest of MLS, the small market teams. And, you know, it's going to be quite the castle built on his private island. And he's building his little, James Bond villain lair just solely on Orlando City fines these days.
All right, so last I checked, you and I cannot be fined for anything. If you don't tweet that out tomorrow or tonight, I'm going to be highly upset.
If I was any good at Photoshop, Dave.
Do you need me to make something for you?
That might already have been out there, but I'm not good at Photoshop. So, but I'm also very sensitive to Photoshopping right now because there was a very ugly Photoshop job by an Orlando City supporters group. I'm not going to name the group that went out. That was very embarrassing. That had Nazi symbols on it and had put Don Garber in a Hitler guise, and that was a very bad look. And I was kind of disgusted by that. You can't do that, man. No matter how bad you're feeling, you can't do that. So, you know,
well, it
gives us all a bad look because, you know, I would never, do that.
It's Godwin's law. Godwin's law is the internet thing where as soon as somebody mentions Hitler, then all conversation stops.
It's, you know, it's 2018, man. Read the room. Some things are just not okay. It's just not. And that's one of those things. So I'm not going to beat him up over it. I think it was a bad look, a bad move. I wouldn't have done it. I don't support it, but, you know,
I'm pretty sure Nazis have always been a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, especially today, I mean, everything's Nazi this, Nazi that, fascist this, fascist that. It's brutal. It's brutal, but we'll move on. Okay. So I don't know, Dave, do we have any questions this week? I mean, we don't have any guests because I wasn't going to put a guest through, you know,
all of this.
this feeling I have, I just didn't get excited enough to say, yes, let's find us a cool guest. There's no Orlando City game this weekend, so we get a week without a loss, which is good. You know, before the Atlanta United beating that we'll take next week with half the team out.
Michael and Dave beat up on themselves over two losses type week. So
yeah, it just
we don't want
feel...
to subject anybody to that.
Yeah, so sorry. We'll try to return next week with a good guest to make up for it. But I haven't even looked to see if there are questions on Twitter. Have you looked?
I am doing so right now. I think they're actually.
I'm going to talk then, so that you can look while I talk, and then
There are. All right, so
well, before you start, let me say
okay,
that you can ask us anything, and there's a couple ways you can do that. You can email us, themainland@gmail.com is how you get a hold of us, or you can hit us up on Twitter. Our Twitter account is @themainland, and just hit us up with that hashtag #AskTMLPC. We do have an email from Dave, also known as Andujar on the mainland comments board.
Greetings, Andujar.
Anuhar's question, he says, thanks for taking my email, long-time listener, second-time emailer. What is the definition of clear and obvious, and can you send it to me and CC, MLS, and Pro? I'll hang up and listen to your comments. I love this email, by the way. This is a great all-star. You are a friend of the podcast, Dave.
That right there made you a friend of the podcast, without
yes.
a doubt.
As we mentioned at the top of the broadcast here, it's not clear or obvious what clear and obvious means. So I don't have the definition. I know I have what I think it means, which is
as do I,
which is like, okay, here's what I see. If you have an offside call and the flag is not supposed to go up, because they're supposed to sort it all out with video review. If it's a close play, the flag's not supposed to go up, but the flag did go up on, Sunday night. And to me, a clear and obvious error on offside is if you call the guy offside and he's, you know, a good one or more feet onside, then you've got a clear and obvious offside onside situation. You've got a clear and obvious, you can see it with the naked eye and you don't need any sort of, you know, lines on the field. Yeah, you don't need to do any mathematics or any, you know, math gymnastics to figure out if he was onside. That's what clear and obvious is. That's not what happened in the game.
Nope.
And again, on that first one, he's assuming intent. He was assuming that Christian, you know, threw an elbow intentionally trying to hit the guy in the head. And maybe Christian was, but you can't just assume that. You have to be, it has to be clear and obvious. Now, there was another play, the game that was on after Orlando City was Seattle and Dallas. There was a play at the end of that game that was another unbelievable misuse of video review. Ted Uncle was surprisingly the referee in that game. I know you're going to be shocked by that, but what happened was a Seattle player, Rui Diaz, threw a backward headbutt at Ziegler of Dallas. And you don't see that often, somebody throwing a backward headbutt into the guy's face. Now, of course, Ziegler didn't like that very much, so he slapped Rui Diaz in the head and hit him in the back, and so he threw a couple of swings at him. Now the swings got the red card, but there was no video review for the backward headbutt, which is also an instant red card.
Right.
And then because it was like it took him like it were, there were 4 minutes of stoppage time given. It took him the full 4 minutes of that to figure out, to get everything sorted out and restart the game. And then he ended the game. Like, he didn't add on any time after that. So, like, he was like, I've had enough. We're done here, which that is referee's discretion. But, oh, my God, is that abuse of power? Because, maybe Dallas, even with 10 men, would have maybe liked to have had a couple of minutes to try to score an equalizer.
Sure, the opportunity would have been, nice, but wow.
It was a similar situation was when against Atlanta, when Orlando City fans threw all that stuff on the field, and it was like, well, now we don't get that opportunity. All those seconds have been wasted that we don't get that opportunity to maybe get a tying goal. It was it's not the same situation, but it's a similar situation in terms of the referee saying, you know what, I've had it, we're done here.
Right. Yeah. But in this case, it was the referee's fault.
Yeah, and I don't know how if you're the VAR sitting up in the booth and you see that play and you have to review it because it's a red card. Every red card gets reviewed. How do you not go, I think there was one also on Seattle. You mm-hmm. need to take a look at that.
He didn't rewind far enough. I don't know. That's the only thing
Sharp,
I can come up with.
I mean, maybe Sharp Objects was on the West Coast at that time on HBO, and maybe
he was distracted.
Yeah. He was like, Amy Adams, man, she's awesome. This is a really good show. I can't be turning this off. Or maybe it was Fear the Walking Dead he was watching. I don't know. But
whatever he was actually watching must have been really good. And he's just like, yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah, was it Petke that's talked about the ref watching The Simpsons?
Oh, my God, really?
I don't remember. Somebody said something. I think it was Petke's rant this year, earlier this year, where he talked about the video assistant must have been watching The Simpsons or something. And I loved it. That was great. But anyway, Andujar, thanks for your question. Really appreciate that. I think that's the only one I got in the email.
We didn't even really answer it. I guess we kind of did.
Yeah.
Basically, there is.
There isn't.
Yeah, there is no clear and obvious. I mean, if Andujar, if you would like us to grab Webster's and copy it and send it to Pro and MLS, I'll happily do so. So, as a matter of fact, I will get on that tomorrow or today as of when anybody hopefully is listening to this podcast. So I will actually do that tomorrow on Twitter.
I'm not sure people are still listening to this after the season this team has had. I often wonder, like, should I go look at the numbers? I'm afraid to, because why would anybody? I mean, it's bad enough you're watching the games. Why would you put yourself through reliving them?
I mean, it's bad enough having to listen to us, but then having to listen to us talk about a bad game, yeah, that's hard.
I don't want to talk about these losses, why would you want to hear about them? I don't know.
Right.
But we do appreciate it.
Yeah, no, if you're listening, I mean, thank you so very much.
We owe you a beer. If you're listening if you're listening to this, especially over an hour into this podcast, you are owed a beer by Dave and myself.
Absolutely. We do have a question on Twitter, though.
Okay.
A friend of the podcast, Spot, says, how many gut punches can you endure in a season before suffering permanent damage to vital organs?
Yes, I did see that question now that you mentioned it. I wasn't sure if that was an Ask the Mainland podcast question or if it was just to me or whatever. But
No, it was, and then he then clarified with another tweet that says that was supposed to be an Ask the TMLPC.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Spot, for the question. My innards are powder at this point. The gut punches have just I'm basically being held together with duct tape.
You still have powder? You're so lucky.
It's leaking. It's like it's like, a kid's beanie baby that's got a huge hole in it.
It's a It's the part in the movie where a gore movie where somebody has stabbed somebody in the gut 40 times, and they're literally holding their guts outside of them and looking at them. The other person, like, what do I do?
Oh man, it's the beach scene in it's the beach scene in Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, it's
That's what this
that.
season is. That's
That's where we are.
the metaphor for this season. It's
We
Omaha
figured it
Beach.
out.
Yeah. We're on Omaha Beach.
And we're the ones that are having to try and take the beach. Oh God.
Yeah, we didn't even get the courtesy of being mowed down in while we're still in the boat.
We're in the water. Yeah,
Yeah.
no, not. No, we actually made it onto the beach. Yeah.
Oh.
Ouch.
All right,
God,
is that
that's
all the
hard.
questions for Ask the Mainland Podcast? Anything?
I think it is because I think people are just so beaten down that they didn't even have the energy to ask us anything.
Yeah, I think the question I've seen most, it wasn't directed toward Ask the Mainland Podcast anything, but the question I've seen most put to us this over the last week, can we go back to USL?
I don't
Yeah, we may
understand.
as well. I mean, maybe we'll get a call there.
Yeah, they did like us there, so
Yeah.
I don't know. It might be maybe that's not such a bad
That's where all
idea.
the trophies came from. Thank you, USL.
It's not easy being purple right now.
It is not. It is, in fact, quite difficult. But thank you to those of you who write to us every week, and the couple of you that did this week. We appreciate it. Ask the Mainland
And for those.
Podcast is hashtag AskTMLPC on Twitter, and tweet at our account, which is at the Mainland, or hit us up at themainland@gmail.com.
And for those three or four listeners out there, thank you as well.
Absolutely. Okay, so yeah, we're wrapping things up here. We don't have an Orlando City game to preview, so there's no key matchups, there's no scoreline predictions. It wouldn't be a good scoreline prediction if there was.
No,
It would.
but we here's the good news. We won't be wrong.
Yeah. Did I really predict 3-2 last week?
You really did predict
How did
3-2.
that?
I predict I should have been right. I predicted 2-2. I should have been the one that was right, but you predicted 3-2.
How did that even happen? How do I even? I can't even be happy about being right.
Yeah, I know that really does suck for you.
Because the
Like
way,
if I had been right, I'd have been
the way
ecstatic.
that it happened, there's just no way to be happy about that. There's just no
Right,
way.
but if I had been right, it would have been great. But no, because you were right, then we're all sad. Way to go, Michael.
Well, maybe this will cheer you up.
Okay.
We have a 5-star review to read on iTunes.
We
We
do.
do. As of Thursday of
Awesome.
last week, we had one. It's from R.H. Smith, the iTunes review, 5 stars. And let's get to that.
Yes, because I need that.
The team might struggle, but this podcast doesn't. As a weekly listener and season ticket holder, I can assure you that this podcast is the catch-all that you have been looking for. Team analysis, great interviews, Q&A, and a few laughs. Michael and David put in 90 minutes of effort, even on weeks when the team didn't. It's even better than the club's own podcast nowadays. Here's to the pod. Tune in. Thank you so much. That is a great
That's
review.
awesome.
Yes, really
That.
appreciate that. If you want to get your 5-star review on the air, read on the air by us, you just have to go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you like about the podcast, and we will read that review on the air as we just did. That might be my favorite one so far. That was really good.
It's absolutely my favorite one so far. I want you to send it to me so I can put it in my mirror in the morning so I see that and I'm like, okay, I am a good person
Your
now.
daily affirmation, I'm good
Exactly.
enough, I'm
It's just
smart
gonna be
enough, and doggone it,
and
people
gosh
like
darn it. Gosh darn it, one person likes
Yeah,
me.
exactly. All right, well, the Orlando Pride will head to North Carolina Courage this weekend. Hopefully it won't be another massacre. We'll see. You know, if the Pride, this Pride team is too talented. If they could just figure out a way to turn it on and everybody get on the same page, they could do damage. Let's hope that happens this Saturday at Cary, North Carolina, at Wake Med Soccer Park. I don't know, Dave. I guess you could give us a prediction for that before we sign off.
I'm going to be positive and say 2-2.
Okay, well, that is positively a prediction. I'm going to go with 3-1 Courage. I'm going to guess, since Orlando doesn't ever get a break that, or the Courage are going to go ahead and play Crystal Dunn and play, you know, all of their star players and just try to bury us and out of the playoff race, and take their chances against the Red Stars and the Rain and the Thorns.
Sadly, my prediction is the John Wick outcome. So,
all right. Well, thanks everybody who sent in email questions. You can again do that for us next week if you like, because obviously we'll have a preview of Atlanta United. We'll come back next week. We'll talk about the Pride and the Courage. We'll let you know what happened with Carlos Asquez, because we should know by then. Is there anything we forgot to talk about, Dave?
I'm sure there is, but I'm too beaten down and beaten up to think of it.
Yeah, okay. This is a good time to sign off. We'll let you off the hook this time and go under the 90-minute mark.
Right after we get that review, we're like, no, we can't do it. Sorry.
Yes. Well, you know, it's shortened a little bit because we didn't have a guest, and I just could not bring myself to ask another person to be on this podcast this week. It's not been a good feeling. I'll tell you what, Sunday night, Dave, I mean, I slept in really late Sunday morning, so I already knew I wasn't going to sleep, you know, get to sleep at a decent hour on Sunday night. But
right.
Even when I'd crawled into bed around 2, I tossed and turned and could not shut out what had happened at the end of that game. So it was a rough Monday for me.
So it was rough Monday for me also, because I didn't sleep in on Sunday, because as our listeners know, I'm a Liverpool fan. So I woke up and we had a fantastic win. So I started my day off great. Now I even said to myself, okay, we're probably not going to do that good tonight. And then they did so close, and then it didn't happen. And I actually had 2 articles, although I forgot about one, and had to get back up and finish it. So I also got to bed late, and so my Monday was not great either.
Yeah.
But yeah.
At least I got to watch Sharp Objects before I went to bed, which was nice, because that was the perfect mood. That show was the perfect mood for the mood I was in. It was just very dark and very disturbing. By the way, nobody asked me this, but if you're looking for recommendations, if you have HBO or HBO Now, Sharp Objects is pretty darn good, and it's only an 8 episode commitment. It's a limited series, and they've got 6 of them up already. So,
well, that sounds good. The other thing that I was thinking about as you were saying that is the end of the Lego movie, where Lego Batman is darkness, parents dead. That's kind of how I felt that night.
Yeah, it's been bad, and I just really having to write that recap was just like, it was a mess. I sat there and just, again, I stared at the keyboard and went, how am I going to talk about this? How do I explain that last 30 seconds leading up to that goal? I don't even know how, but somehow I blacked out and I woke up and it was done.
Well, and as a reminder to everybody listening, we were fans before we do what we do. So we have to watch the same game, feel all the same emotions, and then we have to go, oh, now I get to write about that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's so hard. I mean, we do it, and I'm glad we do it, and a lot of times it gives you a great perspective, blah, blah, blah. But like you said, sometimes it's just, I don't want to do this. Like, even this podcast, we're both like, oh, God, we got to talk about 2 losses. This sucks.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we've never had to do it before, but it just feels like this week they felt more brutal and more like punishment than anything we've ever done before. So,
as Spot said, how many gut punches can we take?
I don't know. But, you know, I got to say, I'm anxious to see how the Lions get out there and lose the next one, because they find new ways to do it, and there are new inventive challenging. It's got to be a challenge now to find a new way to lose.
That's true.
But, you know, they've done it just about every single way there is. And I tell you, if you want to be MLS Player of the Week, or if you want to get a hat trick, or if you want to score in stoppage time, come play Orlando City. That's what I got to say. Because chances are you're going to do it.
Yeah, I can't. There's nothing to add to that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Also, I don't know what the Audi index is, but apparently Luciano Acosta was like a million on the Audi index this week. That's like this arbitrary numeric thing that no one really understands. I just wonder how many points did he get for tripping Pino? Nobody has been able to explain that to me.
All the points. He got
Yeah,
all the
he must
points.
have got at least 10,000 points for that. So,
All the points.
all right. Well, please read our stuff at themainland.com. We'll be back next week to preview the Atlanta United game. We will, of course, talk about the Pride against North Carolina and then preview their next game against Chicago. Any transfer news, anything that, out of the U.S. teams, anything exciting from the world of soccer, we'll, of course, answer your Ask TMLPC questions. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You can catch Dave on Twitter at Mainland Dave. I'm at Mainland Michael. And of course, the Mainland is our main Twitter feed. So we'll be back to do it all again next week. Let's put a bow on episode number 138, and we'll sign off the way I always do. On behalf of David Rowe, I'm Michael Citro saying, go City and go Pride.